show that looks at Kansas City baseball's past, present, and future.
High fly ball. Motley going back to the track. No outs to go. The Royals have won the 1985 World Series.
Davis comes to the plate. Strike three called. It's over. They've done it. The Royals are World Series champions. The world champion Kansas City Royals.
This is the Kansas City Baseball Vault.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome in to the Kansas City Baseball Vault, brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn, Baseball Prospectus affiliate. Folks, we've got some baseball things to talk about, I think. I think it's considered baseball still at this point, but we'll have to get the judge's ruling on that one. But before we get to that business introductions, I am Jeff Hur, of course, and with me as always is the man who loves taking walks around the Truman Sports Complex, Michael Engel. Mike, how are you doing on this very, very balmy, I'll say, evening here in Kansas City?
Yeah, I'm certainly not taking a walk today. I do like a nice walk, though. You know, you download some other podcasts that are out there, some music, and go.
Are there other podcasts?
There are. Okay. There's only really one baseball podcast.
That's true.
This one, but there are others on other topics. So,
fair enough.
You know, there's only 24 hours in the day, so really, you know, I think it's fair to say you can listen to our show 20 times in a day and then spend the other four, you know, listening to some other stuff. There's some good, historical or medical or whatever podcasts.
I'll allow that. Yeah. You know, I'm okay with that. That's fine.
Shake it up a little bit, you know.
You know, hey, just, you know, variety is the spice of life.
Sometimes Alcides Escobar doesn't have to play shortstop and you don't always have to listen to our podcast.
That's right, because just like Alcides Escobar's streak, after you've listened to our podcast 421 consecutive times, you can take a break. It's okay.
Yeah.
And, of course, those who are following the Royals know that that is in reference to the streak that has finally ended, Alcides Escobar playing 421 consecutive games, which, if you do the math, is roughly 2 3/4 seasons-ish straight of starting and playing in a game. So it's not quite Cal Ripken, but, you know, pretty good streak nonetheless. You know, and to remove the results on the field from what you're getting in those 421 games, it's still quite impressive just from a health factor. It's so hard to stay healthy in any sport for that period of time, regardless of what position you play, how good or bad you are, whatever. So to be out there that many times, you know, that's pretty impressive. And it's kind of interesting, you know, I think it says more about the Royals, though, that he was even able to be available for that streak, given the results on the field.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's a different topic. It's over. I can't remember which game it was, but he didn't start one of the games in the last week, and the streak hath ended. So so that's that.
That's about all there is to say about it.
Yeah. The main news as we approach the All-Star game here, of course, you know, as we've discussed in weeks past, talking about the All-Star game, you know, as everyone knows, in baseball, every team has to have a representative, which I am not a fan of that rule. And, you know, if you're to ask me, hey, why are you not a fan of that rule?
Why are you not a fan of that rule?
Oh, I'm glad you asked, Mike. In the future, I may point back to 2018 as a very good reason for why that is, because Salvador Perez is the Royals All-Star representative. Was this his sixth All-Star game?
Yeah, sixth in a row.
So now I think there was a lot of people that thought he would probably have a pretty good chance because of his reputation, because everyone in the league knows him. He's very likable. He's, you know, they all, and people around the league know him from the other All-Star games that he has actually earned his way into. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think that was something in a lot of people's heads, and I think, you know, it does make sense. But when you look at what Salvador Perez has done on the field this year, as much as I love the guy, he does not deserve to be an All-Star. And when you require every team to have a representative, then you're forcing people to make a decision like this. And when you look at the Royals, especially if you're another player in the league, you know, these are the people that are voting on it, you know, the players, managers, every, you know, they're maybe not looking at all the ins and outs of all the stats and how they play every day. They can't possibly, you know, they've got their own games to play and stuff to worry about. So they can't possibly spend that much time worrying about the Royals. So when you look and you're like, okay, the Royals are the worst team in baseball.
Right.
Second worst by record. But, you know, when they're that bad, it's like, okay, well, who am I going to pick? There's obviously nobody on the team that's really that good. So I'm going to go ahead and just pick the guy that I like the best, that I know the most, Salvador Perez. That's your guy. World Series MVP. You know, he's the Royals' face of the franchise. He's on the billboards. He's everywhere. Makes the most sense, really, in terms of how that type of voting occurs. But, you know, then you have – but it brings us to that situation where – he's not deserving. And then even if he's even with him not being deserving, he's still not the most deserving person on his own team even. Because if you really dig a little deeper, not even that much deeper, if you just look, right, then you'll see Whit Merrifield is by far and away the best player on this team so far this season.
Yeah.
And he's carried the team at times. He just had 5 hits the other night. The day that he found out that he didn't get the All-Star nod for the Royals and Perez got it instead, he went out and had 5 hits. So, you know, he's hitting above 300. He's got above 800 OPS. I mean, he's clearly the best player on the team so far this season. And yet, you know, Salvador Perez gets the nod because people know him. And again, you know, nothing against Salvador Perez, but let's be honest with ourselves. He doesn't deserve this nod for the All-Star game. What Merrifield does, if a Royals player has to go, Whit Merrifield is the most deserving, and he doesn't. So that, you know, so you've got two things at play here that I dislike. One, the fact that every team has to have a representative forces you to pick a player, which so often just relies on reputation and how well they're known around the league. And then because of that, then someone who you would think objectively would actually be the most deserving of the, you know, required representation gets looked over because people don't even care enough to look into it. And why should they? Because the Royals aren't that good. So, you know, it would just make more sense. Just assume, okay, if you're not good enough, you don't get in. Nobody, every team doesn't have to have a representative. And then the Royals would not have had anybody this season. And, you know, then it's no big deal. It's just kind of like, well, we're a crappy team. That's the way it goes.
So, do better.
Yeah, exactly. Right. I mean, do you feel similar to me on this?
I get your point, but I still like it. For me, it's an exhibition. I think there's probably less of a draw. You know, I think that you really originally would want to have a reason for any market, any fan base to tune into the game. Cause hey, you get to see your player. And maybe that's kind of cool, but nowadays, like, everybody's got some access to MLB TV. You know, there's so many different national games that pop up. It's not like it's difficult to see some of these players if you really want to, you know, but I also kind of really like, I think back to like, you know, today's like the 28 year anniversary of the Bo Jackson All-Star Game performance in 1989. And I remember that game, like I had that on VHS. That is like an iconic game. That is a huge game for me because at that point I kind of really liked baseball, but I wasn't like super hyper into it. And then all through the rest of that summer, I would watch that tape like, you know, every other week or so. I would just enjoy the crap out of it. And a real fun part of all of it is that opening introduction of every player. And you get to see, you know, players in their actual uniforms on the baseline. And I always thought that was really cool. And that's always been one of my favorite things about the MLB All-Star Game, is being able to see, you know, every player. Now, some years you end up with Ken Harvey or Mark Redman or Aaron Crow as your All-Star representative. And for bad teams, that kind of sucks, because it just is kind of like, yeah, okay, whatever. It, you know, it's a punchline. You know, Mark Redman All-Star is the symbolic example of you know, the really bad years. And, you know, whenever yeah. anybody would talk about, you know, the Royals making the playoffs a few years ago, you know, the long-suffering fans would bring him up as an example of how much we've suffered, because he ended the year with almost like a 6 ERA, and he wasn't even that good at the All-Star break. I still think it's fun, but I do think that they run into a thing where you do have to, you know, you got to pick a team, you know. In the end, you still have to play a game on a field, and so you can't just pick, you know, guys who are objectively the best on their team. In this case, Whit Merrifield and maybe Mike Moustakas would qualify for that kind of thing. Sal Perez, the numbers just aren't there. But, you know, you still have to have a catcher in the game. You know, you can't play a bunch of second basemen or corner infielders all game. You still have to go out and put them on a field. And, you know, again, like you said, you know, the players and coaches selected Perez. He's a known commodity. He's someone that a lot of players seem to like. So, yeah, I guess the name recognition kind of gets him in. And while any other year, yeah, he deserves to be an All-Star, this year his numbers just don't work for that. So that is kind of a side effect of it. I really thought Merrifield was going to get it, because I kind of figure, yeah, he's really the best player on the team. He's going to get 50 doubles this year. You know, he's got 29 doubles through 88 games. Pretty good, you know, and he's definitely got that, the kind of swing and hustle and the kind of game that can just keep getting those, you know, more and more. He steals bases, he's walking more, he's striking out less nowadays. I mean, you know, he's done everything you would expect an All-Star to do. Plus, he can play basically anywhere on the field, which really works for a game where, you know, you do have to start moving players around or substituting for them. So I feel like he would have fit in that game very nicely. But, you know, when it comes down to it, he didn't get voted in. He didn't get into the final vote, and he didn't end up making the All-Star team. So, you know, if they were just looking for name recognition, it was probably going to be Sal Perez or Mike Moustakas. And, you know, Perez is kind of the more recognizable guy, I guess. So the players and coaches selected him. It's not the right decision, but it's not going to be something that I think 10 years from now we're deriding quite as much as Mark Redman as an All-Star team.
No.
Because at least Sal Perez has been there before and has been definitely deserving.
He's got the All-Star pedigree.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, whatever. His numbers are bad. He's in the game. So it goes. In general, the rule, I still kind of like it. Sentimental reasons, and mm-hmm. you know, I in the end it's an exhibition, but you know, it does help if they select the right player for that team if they're forced to take one from a team, and they didn't in this case.
Yeah, and you know, you bring up a good point. You know, it is really cool to have that moment before the game, you know, and especially I especially can see making an exception for, you know, the hometown team. Like, you would definitely require that mm-hmm. because, you know, like, it was so cool when, you know, Billy Butler was the lone representative in 2012, and he stood out there and got that huge ovation. Uh-huh. You know, you could hear it on the TV, everything. Like, that was really cool. So I understand what you're saying from that point. So I could definitely see that being an exception. I feel like it kind of dilutes the game a little bit. Cause then I always thought this about, you know, with the NFL too, when you talk about Pro Bowls, you know, it's not the same, cause not every team is required to have a representative, but, mm-hmm. The voting is similar in that there's so much of it based on, reputation and such. So, you know, when you look at like Hall of Fame voting, you know, and they, you always have like, you know, your player card or whatever that comes up on SportsCenter when they start talking about who's eligible for the Hall of Fame in a particular year or whatever. And you see X number of All-Star appearances or X number of Pro Bowl appearances or whatever, you know, it's like, well, especially in baseball, you know, let's say Salvador Perez plays out his career here. I mean, the next two or three years look pretty bleak right now for the Royals. So the odds of them having someone who's just like that good that he has to be an All-Star, you know, probably not very high. So there's a good opportunity or good possibility that Salvador Perez could continue to just, you know, not play.
Just rack him up.
But rack up another. And so then, you know, by the time it rolls around for his voting for the Hall of Fame, you know, that people are going to be like, well, he made 15 All-Star games. You know, it's like, ah, okay, that does sound pretty impressive.
Yeah.
So there must have been something going on, right? And it's just, so, you know, that's kind of always what I've thought as well in the back of my head when it comes to that kind of stuff. But it is pretty cool to have that little bit of a thrill. See your guy up on the screen and the screen, like I'm thinking of watching it on TV, but you know, seeing him up on the big screen if you're at the game and on the TV, all that kind of stuff. So that,
yeah,
I can understand that.
Like so when you know that S is coming up for Sweeney or M for Montgomery or S for Soria or, you know, you're one guy.
Yeah.
It's usually for the Royals, it's been the same guy for a few years. Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, but at the same, yeah. I mean, is that worth it for 10 seconds of coolness? Maybe not, but I still like it, you know. And I also like, I think the baseball's All-Star game is by far the best of the major All-Star games. I would say maybe the NHL All-Star weekend is probably better because of all the other events, but I would say that the All-Star game itself in the play of it for baseball, it's kind of hard to be as gimmicky as like the Pro Bowl or the NBA All-Star game ends up being, when you still have to play a regular type of baseball game. So, you know, I still like the All-Star game. I still like the introductions, all the hoopla around it. So,
well, it's the easiest to have like a legitimate full game, full game without the players putting themselves at too much risk for an injury.
Yeah.
So the chances of you getting an actual good game for the All-Star game are higher in baseball than any other sport.
Yeah. Yeah. I haven't watched the Pro Bowl in probably 15 years. I don't miss it one bit. I don't care.
Yeah, it hasn't. It's been a few years since I've watched it in the same. I just kind of stopped caring.
Yeah.
And I think there was somebody that had a good point for the Pro Bowl, what they should do. You know, just like release a Pro Bowl team, but don't actually have a game. You know, maybe have a skills competition like you're talking about with the NHL. Just have them all there for the weekend. They pose for a picture or whatever, but don't actually play the game.
and then you don't end up with an AFC roster that has three quarterbacks in the game, but eight quarterbacks made the Pro Bowl from the conference.
Right? Yeah.
It's like, well, gee. Like, didn't Matt Cassel make a Pro Bowl?
Oh, yeah. Oh, he made it, yep. And then, you know, Alex Smith made it last year. And he had a pretty good season, actually.
Yeah, but Alex Smith was pretty good, you know, but... Yeah, it's like, you know,
when he wasn't one of the three that were initially selected, but still makes it, and all four, just like you said, you know, get to put Pro Bowler on their resume. So
right,
I don't know.
Like, well,
I don't know.
Yeah,
I'm off my soapbox for the moment. Yeah, so,
and good for Sal.
Yeah, you know,
that's about it.
He's, you know,
I wish it was Whit Merrifield, but what can you do?
So do I. What can you do?
They didn't give us a chance to vote this year, so, you know, not on the final vote.
No, they didn't.
Which I don't think Royals fans would have been as engaged this year as in other years anyway, but...
I would guess not.
No. Especially with Seattle. Gene Segura ended up winning that final vote, and Seattle fans are hyped. They're like Royals fans in 14 and 15, I think.
Oh, I'm sure, yeah. Like, they're ready to go.
Oh, heck yeah, it's been too damn long. So... kind of fun to root for them.
We can sympathize. We know where they're coming from.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Completely.
So anyway, so that's kind of the biggest piece of news, but we'll go into some other Kind of a lot of little small things that kind of happened that might actually turn out to be, some of them may turn out to be some sizable impacts here. As the Royals, you know, continue hurtling towards the trade deadline, if we look past the All-Star game horizon and where their roster will be, there have been some changes. Jason Hamill, who just went out and just got rocked the other night.
Yeah. I was at that game.
Oh, were you?
Hadn't even sat down yet, and Mookie Betts hit a homer, and then they just kept hitting off him, and sooner or later, oh, there's eight runs. Okay, well, damn.
Yep.
Brutal.
Brutal indeed. And then, so he, given his poor performance, that was kind of the final straw. The Royals removed him from the starting rotation, and they've tapped Birch Smith to take his place. So that's a bit of an uncertainty. Not exactly sure what we're going to get from him in the starting rotation. Jacob Junis, who has been having a very good season and has been one of the more dependable pieces of the rotation, he is now injured. He's on the DL. Recently, Heath Philmeyer got a start. And, I mean, there's just been a lot of movement there. I feel like I'm missing something. There were a couple. There was more, weren't there?
There's a heck of a lot of, like, movement. But basically for the rotation, that pretty much covers it. The Ian Kennedy was on the DL, then he came off. He threw three innings, left early, is back on the DL. So I would imagine Phil Myers is going to start for him again. Yeah, I mean, it's everything's kind of in flux right now. There's been a lot of, Justin Grimm went on the DL, then got released from the DL. Blaine Boyer went on the 60-day disabled list. The Royals called up Glenn Sparkman from Omaha, who, had originally been lost to the Blue Jays in the Rule 5 draft and then found his way back. Any Romero, who was pitching for Pittsburgh, was claimed. He's a lefty. He can throw kind of hard, but he gave up a couple homers since he's joined the Royals. He's been added. You know, I mean, it's just a lot of stuff happening. Jason Adam has been optioned, then recalled, then optioned, then recalled, you know, all within the span of, you know, I think he was optioned to make room for Kennedy coming back from the DL, and then before 24 hours were up, Kennedy went on the DL and Adam was called back up. So hopefully he didn't get in the car and go up I-29 towards Omaha.
Yeah.
Hopefully he hung out. Actually, AAA is all off for their All-Star week, so he probably didn't go anywhere.
He lives, you know, his family's from here, so yeah. He might have just stuck around there anyway.
Just hung out and hung out with the fam. God, I don't know. I feel like there are other moves that happen, but I mean, that's...
Well, there's a lot of movement at the minor league level. I don't really, you know, I can't recall all the moves, but there were some people, you know, people have been moving up, moving down to different leagues. So there's that as well.
But yeah, the main thing is that now you've got Danny Duffy, Brad Keller, and then this group of you know, Birch Smith,
the Police Academy,
Heath Philmeyer. I mean, yeah, kind of. I assume Philmeyer is going to be starting for Kennedy in a couple days, the last game before the All-Star break. It's looking a little rough. It's not the best group out there. So the main thing, this kind of surprising thing, is Hamill. Because there have been times this year where he's pitched okay out of the rotation. Maybe not necessarily good, but he's pitched okay. There have been times where he's been hammered, you know. So I get wanting to make a move, but the Royals all year haven't really had, you know, a whole lot of guys to just step into that. Trevor Oakes has come up a little bit. He made a spot start somewhere in the last couple weeks. So he might be someone they lean on as well. Kennedy, who knows how long he's going to be out. It's an oblique thing. Obliques can be really weird. He's already re-injured it. Junis is probably out till the end of July. you know, just a lot of, you're going to have a lot of pitchers that you didn't think would be in the rotation in the rotation. And, you know, it's not like that rotation has been that strong all year anyway. So I guess at least you get to find some things out. You know, you get to find out some stuff about Birch Smith, Heath Fehlmeyer, and probably Trevor Oakes. I guess that's what the rest of this year is really going to be meant for. Maybe Jason Hamill puts up some nice, you know, middle relief or late inning relief innings, and someone decides that they want to trade something of value for him. Maybe.
Because that was one of the things that people were saying at the beginning of the season, you know, well, because Jason Hamill had his moments last year where he pitched pretty well also. So they thought, okay, well, if he can just have a good couple months to start the season, the Royals can offload him and maybe get something out of him. But, you know, that's pretty much out the window, unless, like you just said, he somehow, you know, shows he can perform in high leverage situations, maybe. I don't know. I don't think that's the thing that will happen, but
yeah,
it's out there. It's a possibility. It's all on the table right now.
Yeah, I mean, they're kind of at a point where they're just kind of, you know, seeing what they have. You know, there's not a lot of talent in the upper minors. There's a lot of those 4A looking type of guys. And, you know, they went out and they acquired a lot of those types of guys. Fehlmeyer, Oakes, Smith, Brad Keller, all four of those guys were brought in over the winter. You know, two through the Rule 5 and two through trades. So, you know, that puts them in a position where, yeah, they're really fighting to just kind of, like, get talent. Like, if they hadn't made some of those moves, who the heck would they be calling up at this point? Like, I just don't know. So, yeah, they're going to learn some things. They might not learn good things. Maybe they do. Maybe somebody figures something out and, you know, Trevor Oakes settles in and looks like maybe he's a number four starter. I don't know. But that's basically what the next, you know, what do they have, 70 games of the season? That's kind of what they're going to be looking at now. For good or ill,
yeah,
you know, they don't have much reason to push Junis until he's ready. Just because, you know, it's a back thing. Why do you want to push a young pitcher with some back thing? You know, it's not really that worth it. So if they take an extra week or two on him, fine. You know, it's not like they were winning games with him the last 2 months anyway. In April, he was the only guy who could win a game, and that's about it. And then Kennedy, it's, you know, I don't know. He's owed so much money still that it's like they don't really benefit by pushing him out there either. Maybe towards the end of the year, maybe in August somewhere, someone wants to pick him up or something. I doubt it, but yeah, there it's pretty rough. It's Danny Duffy, Brad Keller, and Police Academy, you know, maybe someone develops, maybe Birch Smith gets comfortable in the rotation. He, you know, threw 3+ innings today in a start, you know, gave up some runs, but you know, the Royals were ahead when he left, I think. So, not all on him. Fehlmeyer, his numbers overall this season are good. His one start, he wasn't super sharp. Oakes had his moments the couple times he's been up. So, I don't know. It's a lot of shuffling. You know, I'm kind of interested to see what Glenn Sparkman can do, because he's had pretty good numbers in the minors. And you know, the Royals obviously felt pretty good about bringing him back. So maybe he can do something when he's, you know, getting the opportunity. But I don't know. It's a lot of shuffling, and maybe it's you know, the deck chairs on the Titanic. But, you know, they're going to learn some things.
Like the Titanic as it sits today.
Yeah, yeah.
The season is already
way at the bottom. Yeah, yeah. They're taking on water and they're falling fast. So,
yeah, I mean, and like you said, you know, I think that's what the season's about now. Seeing what we have from who, from what, you know, what can they give us moving forward? Exactly. You know, because, excuse me, like you said, the top of the minors, it's pretty thin right now. And, hell, the most of the minors is pretty thin. right now for the Royals.
Yeah, until you get into Double A and Low A.
Yeah,
and...
you start getting into the lower ranks where, but those guys, you know, 3-4 years away. Mm-hmm. So what's going to happen in the meantime? We don't know, but the Royals need to find out because, you know, this season they're on pace for 117 losses, and
I hadn't done the math yet.
Why I didn't dare do the math myself, but I did hear that on the radio as I was driving into work one morning this week. So they are, I mean, because right now they're 26-66 counting today's loss. That's 40 games below 500. 40 games below 500. And I mean,
they lost 67 games in 2015.
Yeah, they're
I mean, they could still do better than that, but yeah, they're gonna win every 70 games in a row.
You know, no big deal,
no biggie.
I think that would be a new record.
I imagine so.
That if the Royals won 70 games in a row, especially this Royals team, that would be the most impressive streak in sports history. Like, just it would never be topped.
You might even get a Brad Pitt movie out of it.
You might even. That would be fantastic. I would love that.
Speaking of, not to get off the rails, but we might as well if we're talking about 117 lost seasons. I was watching this movie this weekend on Netflix. It's called like The Tale of the White-Tailed Deer or something like that. I don't know. It's Josh Brolin and Danny McBride, and it's basically a spoof on like hunting videos. And the thing is, Brolin is like the star, but my God, the whole time, it's like an hour and a half movie, the whole time I was watching it, all I could think about is he looks like Ned Yost when you look at like old baseball cards. Like, he had the mustache thing working, and like he looks like Ned Yost in 1982. Like, it was uncanny, and it made me think about a few years ago when the Royals were going on, you know, when they were winning the division and everything, how every now and then we would...
Oh, geez. Yeah.
Yeah,
okay.
You see it?
I could totally see it.
Yeah. So, like... Why? Like, we were trying to cast, like, a Royals movie, and it's like, yeah. Like, I could not shake it. It was ridiculous.
Oh, man. Yeah. I found on the internet, a baseball card of him with the Rangers, where he's got the mustache rocking.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it's uncanny. That's nuts.
Yeah.
That never crossed my mind before.
No, I never made the connection. Then I saw this movie, and it's like, holy crap. Yeah, so Josh Brolin as Ned Yost, that is...
Definitely. That is
money in the bank, Hollywood. Take it away. You know what? Rewrite the history. Put him in the tree stand in 2013.
Yeah, what the hell, you know?
You can be a little anachronistic in this.
Yeah.
Put him in the tree stand. He has a vision, and they carry out that vision. 2015 champions. That's why they never quit. Rousing speech in the clubhouse before game four at Houston. The rain delay.
He's
in
a wheelchair. He's in a wheelchair the whole season. And then before the World Series, he stands up out of the wheelchair and gives a rousing speech.
Yes.
We just need to write this down. Mike and Jeff here.
That is intellectual property right there. So no one can take it.
Stealing that. Because, you know, I mean, somebody will go look it up after the game and be like, did that really happen? And it'll be like, well, Ned Yost fell out of a tree, but it wasn't the same year of the World Series. And people will be like, oh, okay, whatever. No big deal. Well, no one will care. Let's do it.
In 42, Jackie Robinson hit a walk-off home run in, like, Philadelphia. You know, he only played for Brooklyn, but somehow walked it off in a road game.
Yeah, you know.
You know, why? You know, what's...
Hey, it's okay.
Drama's fine. Yeah.
It's entertainment.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, that's what we'll do the rest of the year.
That's what we'll do, yeah. Every week, write a new scene.
Right.
The Royals 2015 movie starring Josh Brolin.
Yosted, a story of triumph.
Yosted, a story of triumph, yes. Maybe we can cast the rest of the main players. We'll have to do some research.
Have to hit up Twitter because I think it was Cupcakes Are Nice on Twitter was doing a lot of that, and she would take nominations and then there would be voting on it. So we'll have to see what we can find because
that's perfect. It's I'm gonna have to like tweet out this picture or something.
Yeah,
that's perfect. Well, anyway,
where were we? Oh, yeah, pitching. Pitching's not as interesting.
Oh, it's not. Well, we're talking about the losing. So the Royals have lost 28 of their last 32 games. They won yesterday. Yesterday, we're recording on Wednesday, July 11th. So on July 10th, Tuesday, they won a game. But before that, they lost 9 in a row. So, counting yesterday's win and today's loss, they're 28 of their last 32 they've lost 28 of their last 32, which is just, my God, man.
that's a 12.5 winning percentage.
Oh,
put it this way. Let's look at it like this. Drew Butera is hitting 168. That he got a hit more frequently than the Royals won a game over those last 32.
Wow.
Also, Drew Butera is hitting 168, so that's another thing. And his ERA is terrible.
Well, all right.
Yeah.
Just to give you an idea.
That's where we're at.
So right now, the Royals have precisely two players hitting over 251 in the lineup. They have Mike Moustakas and Alex Gordon. Hey, Alex Gordon, are hitting 251 on the season. So basically 250. And they only have two players that are doing better. One, Jorge Soler, is on the DL. I should say three players, because I'm neglecting woefully John Jay, of course, him not being on the Royals anymore. So really it's just Whit Merrifield, who's having a fantastic season, as you already mentioned earlier. And then Jorge Soler, who's on the DL. I mean, Rosel Herrera, who we haven't really talked about, but is an interesting little experiment the Royals got going. He's doing decent. He's hitting 267. He's only played in 19 games, so it's not nearly a very large sample size. But he showed some things. So who knows? Maybe he could develop.
He's pretty fun. Yeah.
Yeah. So he could be just one of those guys who, maybe a Paolo Orlando type, who he's not set the world on fire, but he has a couple of years where he comes up in big moments and does some fun things. And hey, there's nothing wrong with that. That's fun. Mm-hmm. Right. We've got Jorge Bonifacio, who's back now. We missed that. We didn't really talk about that. We talked about it last show. We didn't have a show last week because of the holiday. But Jorge Bonifacio is back now. He's played in 10 games, and Adalberto Mondesi is up, and he's kind of showed some things. He hit a big time home run yesterday. A
big one. Yeah. Like 415.
Yeah.
Nice.
Show a little bit of power. He's got two home runs on the season so far, and Jorge Bonifacio, like I said, he's looking pretty solid so far in his route back. So those are two guys who the Royals were kind of hoping on going into the season before, of course, Bonifacio got nailed with the PED suspension, and Mondesi I really hope the Royals don't look back on Adalberto Mondesi and think, regret how they handled the situation, because they've handled him very poorly, I think.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's fair.
So it's and I think I mentioned this before when we talked about it. I can't remember when it was, a couple weeks ago maybe, but where it's just like, I don't know that we will ever know the true potential of Mondesi, because the Royals just kind of so much. I think it's possible he still becomes a good player, but we'll never know how good he could have actually been. And you could say, you could make that argument about everyone, but no, not really, because there's a lot of players who how good they could be and how good they are, and that's just kind of the way it is. But I don't know. We'll see. I hope I'm wrong, but that's what I hope I see. But it's good to see him, you know, start to get some things going and start to pick up a little bit. He's still only 22 years old, got a ton of room to grow. And with Alcides Escobar, the Royals finally committing to kind of move him to the side, you know, it's time for Mondesi to step into that role, to step up and you know, prove he belongs. So, you know, he's starting to put some things together. You know, he had a good day yesterday, like we said. So hopefully, you know, he can continue on that path and start, you know, start showing himself to be the player that everyone was hoping he could be.
Yeah, he definitely looks a lot more comfortable. I mean, anybody should remember 2016, 2017 when he had been up that, like, chasing pitches off speed, breaking pitches down quite often and really didn't hit him. And he still doesn't hit him, but he's laying off them more frequently, it feels like. He's not trying to bunt every other at bat, which I always felt was kind of like a crutch because, like, he, you know, he's got speed. He knows he can make something happen that way and maybe didn't feel comfortable actually going out and taking a rip. Now he's having decent at-bats. You know, he's only got a 254 on base percentage. So, I mean, he could definitely be better as far as, you know, working counts, drawing walks. But, you know, he's getting on base. He's getting to second base. He's scoring runs when he gets on base. He's got two homers, like you said. And he's getting more comfortable at shortstop. So he's kind of starting to kind of sort things out. The first seven games when he came up, he was 3-for-21. The next 11 before today, he was hitting .275 with a .293 on base and a .500 slugging. So, yeah, you'll kind of live with that. That would not be too bad. I really do wish he would find ways to get on base more because his speed is so good. And I think he has decent instincts as a base stealer. And once he's on, he can just create havoc. So, you know, to be able to maximize that ability would be excellent. But, you know, he drew, I think, his second walk of the year last night or something. So, you know, 19 strikeouts to two walks all season. Still a lot of room to kind of go. But, you know, he definitely looks better than any other point in the last 2 years when he's been up, you know, just in the last, you know, week and a half, 2 weeks. So that's encouraging. And that the Royals are finally finding a way to carve out some time for him is also encouraging. And he's getting to play shortstop in the process. So that was something that he was always at second base so many of those other times. Or, you know, maybe a very late game replacement in a blowout over the last couple of years. But now he's starting there. He's playing the whole game there. And Escobar is playing some third, some center field, or, oh my God, actually sitting. So they're giving him, you know, little opportunities here and there and finding a way to, like, get him some regular playing time, which I think if he's feeling more comfortable should probably be beneficial to him. So he's probably the one guy that, like, you kind of want to track the rest of the year just because he is, you know, he's been such a significant name in the system for so long, you know, 6 years already, and he's barely 22. So, yeah, you want to see what he can do and what he can do with the opportunity. So, you know, the last 2 weeks, he's done a lot with it. Yesterday, he did a lot with it. Next week, who knows? We'll see. I guess the next three games. He doesn't, you know, he's got a couple days off there. So,
yeah. And I think it was Clint who a couple different times has brought up the term prospect fatigue, which is something that I really like that term because it very much describes a situation like you have with Mondesi, I think, or a lot of people might have with Mondesi or a lot of different, you know, like a not really Chester Cuthbert, but even, you know, a couple of years ago, Chester Cuthbert, or just these players have been around for so long, and it feels like we've been hearing about them for so long that it just kind of, we forget how young they are. You know, you talk about Mondesi still being only 22, and he's had, you know, pretty decent amount of time in the major leagues. So he's still got some room to grow in there, and hopefully, like you said, hopefully he takes advantage of it. But yeah, I mean, that's kind of kind of it.
Yeah.
In terms of what's been going on, things have been kind of winding down as we head towards the All-Star game here.
Yeah. The only other thing, I mean, some other news, the Royals signed their first and second picks from the draft. Braden Singer and Jackson Cower both signed. They signed a 16-year-old kid out of Japan, Kaito Yuki, who usually they don't sign that early. He's foregoing high school to jump into professional baseball in America. Usually they have a much different process, so that's kind of interesting.
So that's actually really interesting to me on a couple different levels. Number one being, I've heard he's the first of his kind, like you just said, that, you know, because normally they've got a very defined pro system in Japan, and so the players come up and they go through the pro system and then they do the posting. You know, we've seen it with Dice K, we saw it with Yu Darvish, etc. You know, we've seen Shohei Ohtani, he went through the same thing. So, you know, we've seen that process play out, and normally that's what happens. But, you know, this guy, he didn't do that. He's going from high school doing the same thing that a lot of the Latin American players do, coming into the system at a very young age, and I'm super intrigued by it. And, you know, the other kind of wrinkle that's really interesting is, you know, I heard on the radio they had talked to Dayton Moore about it, and he had noted that one of the things that the Royals had not done very well at in the past is they felt that they just do not have a shot at a lot of the Japanese players that come over because they don't have that ability to facilitate any sort of a relationship with them and make it, you know, they don't know Midwest culture when they come over into America. Mm-hmm. And so it's much easier to go to New York, LA, etc. So there needs to be some way to make them feel more comfortable if the Royals want to get more Japanese players to come to Kansas City. And so they've hired a couple people, and they're really trying to focus on increasing those relationships and making those things better. Because if you remember, you know, we've talked about it a lot. When Dayton Moore showed up, you know, that was essentially the same philosophy that he put towards the Latin American market, because, you know, the Royals had basically no presence.
They did nothing there hardly. Yeah.
And it was really detrimental to the organization. So he said, okay, we're getting a lot of people in here. We're going to establish very good relationships. We're going to find these players, and we're going to bring them up through our system. And it paid off big time. You know, yeah. Yordano Ventura, Salvador Perez, Kelvin Herrera. You know, those are just the biggest names that have come through. But there are players that, you know, the Royals were able to sign. I mean, Adalberto Mondesi and, you know, Elier Hernandez was another big one. Even though he hasn't, you know, done a ton yet, he was still a big name at the time. Other teams were competing for him, etc. You know, a lot of these people have signed with the Royals because they've had really good relationships with them that have been fostered by the organization. So that's kind of – they're at the beginning portion of trying to do that with now the Japanese market, which – I found that to be fascinating. I think it's really interesting. And to see this Yuki be the first of his kind in the sense of, you know, coming over as a high school player from Japan, like, that's really cool. I'm excited to see how this plays out and what it'll mean for the future, you know, because it's almost sort of a competitive imbalance to have that posting system just because of the sheer amount of money it takes, you know, just to essentially negotiate. Not essentially, mm-hmm. just to negotiate, you know, you're throwing a huge salary at them just to talk to them. And they don't even have to sign, and they're still going to take that money. So it's a big risk for teams like the Royals. So if something like this pans out and it's a little bit more viable in the future, you know, that could change the landscape of baseball even further, similar to how the Latin American players have changed the game as well. So I'm definitely want to keep an eye on this, not only because it could, you know, be good for the Royals. By the way, this kid is like 6'2".
Yeah.
Like he's like 6'2", 240 pounds or something ridiculous. Like, he's huge for a 16-year-old.
I saw him as 170. I don't know about the 240.
Okay, 240.
I saw a picture. I can definitely tell you he's not 240 from the pictures. Okay.
Yeah.
6'2" is...
I must have been thinking of something else. But the 6'2", I mean, that's huge for a 16-year-old.
Yeah, that's a big kid. Big. Yeah. Yeah.
So...
I don't know much else about him. I saw he throws about 88 to 90. That's fine. That's cool. And they think that he's going to grow into it and add some velocity and everything else. So, yeah, it's really intriguing. The Royals, who never really got that involved in that kind of stuff. I mean, they got, you know, Yoshihiko Yabuda a few years ago, and they signed a retread Hideo Nomo, and they did trade for Nori Aoki, but that was a trade.
Lest we forget.
Yeah, yeah. But I remember that his wife did not want to go to the Midwest. So, you know, it is tough. That's a good point about, you know, fostering that culture and kind of getting somebody here and acclimated when, you know, as maybe a selling point, as an advantage, as, you know, a nice approach. So, I mean, we'll see. It's intriguing, you know. It's kind of weirdly unprecedented to see it start that way, but, you know, hopefully it works out.
Yeah, definitely. So, I think that kind of sums it up. I mean, is there anything, any other little tidbits that we're missing? Can't think of anything.
Only other major stuff is, like, you keep hearing rumors about Moustakas and Whit Merrifield are of heavy interest, or, you know, reasonable interest, which makes sense. You know, Merrifield would help a lot of teams. The Royals.
The Brewers, right, was the name I heard.
Are a team that I heard. Make them real easy to root for. Mike Moustakas has been playing some first base. The rumor is that the Yankees have thought about, hey, maybe we would get him to play first base. Maybe they would. I don't know. I don't know. I mean, those are probably – Moustakas, of the guys who will be free agents, is definitely the most valuable. Merrifield, for his flexibility and the way he's playing, probably would bring back the biggest haul overall. But, you know, the Royals are probably asking for quite a lot for him. So I don't think they'd end up trading him. I don't. Moustakas is pretty much probably gone for whatever the highest bid ends up being.
Yes.
They don't really have any, you know, backup plan for keeping him. It's like the Orioles have Manny Machado and he's going to be a free agent, but they can always offer him a qualifying offer and get draft pick compensation if a deal doesn't come up that they like.
Right.
So that might compel some teams to jump up and add a higher prospect to their deal, to make sure that they get him, especially Machado, who's would probably be a pretty big difference maker. And Moustakas, I feel like, would be a really good – he'd be that really good number six hitter on a team to round out the lineup. I think we've talked about it like this before. But I was also thinking about it, like, I also feel like he'd – you know, you remember when the Royals got Ben Zobrist, and by the time you got into the playoffs, it felt like Ben Zobrist had been a Royal through the whole rebuild. Like,
yeah.
He felt like he was exactly a part of this franchise from, like, day one. And I feel like that would be what Moustakas would feel like for a team that he would go to.
For sure.
Because, I mean, he's got, you know, two-time All-Star. He's got power. Doesn't strike out a whole lot. He can draw a walk. He can work a count. Still pretty good defensively. Has always been
He's a very passionate guy.
Yeah, he's always been one of those leadership types. And not like the, you know, the pretend leadership, but like the, you know, burn your ass kind of thing. I think that Houston game four.
Yeah,
you know, he was quoted as being the guy who really kind of rallied the troops. And I feel like, you know, he's got that little something that, yeah, he would fit in nicely with a lot of teams. And the Royals really don't have any reason to keep him. He had his 18th and 19th homers today. You know, be sad to see him go. The Royals probably won't get what people expect for him. But he does have teams. I think the Phillies have been kind of linked to him, as well as the Yankees. And at some point, the Cardinals were in the discussion. But, you know, there might be other teams that pop up as things go along. So, nothing really super concrete with either of those guys, but, you know, they're definitely the two most popular names right now as far as trade value. And after them, that's not really anybody. Lucas Duda, maybe.
Maybe.
He's played well since he's come off the DL, but
yeah,
he didn't play that great before he went on the DL, so his numbers overall don't look great. But
Lucas Duda is like that move, because in 2014, when the Royals went to the trade deadline and didn't do anything, and we were all pissed off at them because they didn't make any big trades to try and go for it. And then, you know, for the August 31st waiver trade deadline, they ended up getting Josh Willingham. That was actually Jason Adam, wasn't it, that they sent for him? Yeah. So
I remember driving into the stadium when they announced that trade too. It was
Because I think we all went to a game together that night, and we were talking about it afterwards.
I don't know if it was that one.
Or maybe it was right around
the one
that
in,
time.
In 14 was the night of the trade deadline, because Eric Hosmer got hurt in the game, I think. And yeah, then it was like a week and a half later they made the trade for Willingham by trading Jason Adam.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. But it feels like that kind of a move some team will make, you know, whether it's by the trade deadline or the waiver deadline, just like, you know, hey, here's a little something. You know, maybe it ends up being, we'll hopefully Lucas Duda can give us a couple sparks through the season when we need him, and tip a few games in our direction.
Yeah,
that's
not a bad platoon bat to face off against a righty, you know, especially once you get into September, if September games matter for the team that would get him. Expanded rosters, you know, you might as well stash a bat who's easy to pinch run for. You know, give him one at bat a couple games a week and, you know, see if he can help get you over the edge in a couple spots. So I think he'll probably get traded somewhere. Not going to get much. I don't think you're going to get much for, you know, any of the non-Moustakas types. If you get anything, if you get a 24-year-old in A-ball who can maybe spin a good slider, hey, maybe that's something to work with. It's better than, you know, just letting them go and become free agents or releasing them. So, but that's kind of how the next couple of weeks shape up in my head. I don't know that there's going to be a lot of fireworks. They kind of already, you know, traded off a couple of those names in Herrera and John Jay. So, you know, it's just unless someone really gets, you know, froggy about Danny Duffy and goes after him, he's pitched a lot better the last couple of weeks. So, you know, but I don't see the Royals trading him either. So, you know, unless they just get, you cannot say no to that deal. But
yeah,
I don't think that deal's out there for like anybody this year.
No.
So I don't know. It'd be interesting next few weeks, but I don't know that it's going to be terribly exciting on the field or in the rumors. But, you know, things happen.
Things certainly do happen.
Technically, yes, always.
We'll see. but so I think we'll leave it at that for this this episode. We will be back next week. Hopefully, we'll have maybe some fun trade deals or something to talk about, or some dare I say too much to ask, some fun baseball to talk about. We'll see. I won't hold my breath, but possibly it'll happen.
Yeah.
So be sure to come back next week. In the meantime, be sure to visit our sponsors. Kelly's Westport Inn, summertime, always a great time to go out and have a few drinks. It's going to be a lot easier to watch Royals baseball with a few drinks. Why not go do it at Kelly's? It's a great place. You'll have a lot of fun, much more fun than just watching the Royals at home. That's for sure. And BP Kansas City, of course. The rest of our staff there just continually pumping out great content, even despite the results on the field. Those do not translate into the blogosphere, thank God. We still have daily content that we're putting out there. And for those of you who are starting to turn that wandering eye towards the minor leagues a little bit, since there's not much happening at the major league level, of course, nobody better than Clint Scholes, his diamonds in the rough, his minor league recaps, everything. He's keeping you up to speed on everything that's going on in the system. Also give him a follow. He's always given on Twitter. He's always given a bunch of little tidbits and stuff that to pass along about some of the minor league players. So be sure to visit our sponsors. They help us greatly, and we would appreciate it. We'll be back next week, so be sure to join us then. And until then, thank you so much for stopping by. See you next time. And as always, go Royals.
Thank you for listening to the Kansas City Baseball Vault. You can follow us on Twitter at KC Baseball Vault.
You can also find us on Baseball Prospectus Kansas City at bpkansascity.com. You can follow BPKC on Twitter at bprokansascity. Also, you can subscribe to the podcast through iTunes, through Stitcher, or whatever podcast app you like. And if you have any questions, comments, or if you just want to say hi, send those emails to kansascitybaseballvault@gmail.com.